recently we've been talking a lot about shelter. We're going to talk a lot about shelter in this conversation. But you'll see that there are other line items of things that we need to work on as a community to put a serious dent in it, and a lot of them are housing related. So let's talk briefly about things that are coming up a lot that are going to be coming up in our panel today, which is that the city is going to be losing 614 shelter beds by the end of the year and is trying to come up with solutions for that. Meanwhile, Mayor Todd Gloria wants to open up a shelter campus with up to 1,000 beds at Kettner and Vine in Middletown, and that could cost about $30 million annually to operate, and more when it comes to various building upgrades and lease payments. The negotiations with the owner of that warehouse continue. Also, the council voted in June to redirect millions of dollars that would have been directed to affordable housing projects to support homeless shelters. And homelessness-related enforcement and camping bans, as I'm sure many of the folks in this room know, have been very hot topics recently in the city and the county. So this is what's really been dominating our conversations about homelessness in recent history. Meanwhile, as that's happening, homeless San Diegans who access shelter are spending more time there waiting for housing. And about 18% of people that do exit actually get permanent housing. The homeless population is also increasingly vulnerable. We're seeing more seniors, more people with serious behavioral health challenges, more disabilities. And many people who try to get shelter right now in the city of San Diego can't get it. Also, the city's housing agency has not pulled from its Section 8 voucher waiting list for 2 years, and it's less equipped to direct vouchers to homeless-serving housing projects. And absent projects that are backed by the state's HomeKey program, there really aren't that many new supportive housing projects designed to serve the most vulnerable. And you might hear this phrase come up. Often people will use the term permanent supportive housing. That's basically just a housing unit that comes with some extra services to help somebody remain housed. Okay, without further ado, after that briefing, we'll get into our discussion. So I want to have all of you on the panel here just reflect on the moment that we're in. You know, I was thinking as I was preparing for the panel about the fact that, you know, the city had been in the midst of this budget discussion and, you know, facing a possibility of big cuts to shelter a few months ago. And, you know, the mayor's been talking about a large shelter. And in the end, the council ended up punting on that shelter that could have cost $30 million in annual operations and then voted also to pull millions that could have funded affordable housing projects, at least for now. And then we learned that hundreds of shelter beds are closing down, leading to this mad rush for new options. So it's quite a moment in homelessness in San Diego right now. What do you all make of these recent events and where we're at? Who wants to take that one? Levi?
I didn't do a mindset first. Oh, let's get this guy going.
Here, do you know?
Test. Okay. So we have a very, very serious problem in San Diego when it comes to housing. As you can see, there's not enough housing. It is causing people to pour out onto the streets. Ultimately, like, what we need to be doing is building more housing. While, you know, obviously we do need more shelter accommodations for something that's going to cost that amount of money and not even, you know, be implementable for the next couple of years. That $30 million, I think, is much better spent on housing that is affordable for the San Diegans who are living in and running the city, so.
Ryan?
Thank you, Levi, for giving the rest of us a moment to wrap our head around that sweeping question. There was a city council hearing earlier this week that looked at short-term options for many of the issues that you mentioned, the loss of shelter beds that are looming. And one of the things that I found encouraging about that was, even though it's a short-term emergency planning process, it seems to have gotten back to the core of the community action plan that was adopted originally in 2019. And the core of that plan was to focus on best practices, to listen to the perspectives of people with lived experience, like Levi, to incorporate the recommendations of frontline service workers and to pursue a broad range of options. And that seems to be a goal that has been elusive since 2019. But under the pressure of the looming loss in beds, the options that were laid out for the city included on the high end a net increase of 74 beds within the next 4 months if all options were pursued. And that's within the existing budget constraints. And I think what that shows is what is possible when we focus on pursuing realistic solutions along the pathways that we know work, and that it actually is an achievable goal. The enemy in the process, I think, is nihilism of assuming that homelessness cannot be solved. And I think that is the challenge, and the civic leaders that adopt that perspective that it's an unsolvable problem, I think, are taking the coward's way out of the solution.
Yeah, and to add to that, something for us to also consider is that we do have some successes that are happening, right? We are getting people into housing. The regional task force releases data each month that shows, on average, we get about 1,000 people into housing, but we do need to keep people housed. So at the same time, we're seeing more people becoming homeless. So we're not able to keep up with the inflow versus the outflow numbers. So we really need to invest in prevention, keeping people housed. We're also seeing seniors becoming homeless at a faster rate, people pricing out of their units. So we need to consider shallow subsidy for affordability. We need to bridge the gap between affordability in our housing market and seniors with fixed income. If their rent increases even by $100, they can't sustain that. And at the same time, our shelters have become a holding place, right? People are waiting for permanent housing that just isn't available. So we need to continue to build affordable housing, permanent supportive housing. On average in our shelters, people are staying 200 days plus waiting for that permanent housing option. So it's really not sustainable. I love that, the Housing Commission with the city presented various options for shelters. We need to consider, bunk beds are not ideal for seniors. So we need to consider options that work for seniors. We need to consider options for seniors. Families. We have so many families that are living in their cars and going into school. The kids are getting ready in their car to go to school. That's just not sustainable. We have to consider the long-term trauma that we're seeing as well.
True.
So I'd agree. Lisa, it's a pivotal time for the city when they're staring down the possibility of closing over 600 shelter beds. And I agree with Ryan that a portfolio of strategies is important to roll out. If there's 5,000 people on the street, there's 5,000 different stories and needs. There's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all approach to this. To spar with my guy Levi down there a little bit, let me back up. We're very much focused on the here, the now. How can we help as many people move off the streets as possible, as quickly as possible, or avoid the streets altogether? And our foundation's governed by, largely by business people, going back to the late Peter Seidler and Dan Shea and Pat Stephanie Kilkenny and others that try to apply business principles to this issue of homelessness. And so, let's pick a $30 million number. Round numbers, that can maybe add 36 housing units. Tomorrow or in a month or two, but, years, if not decades away, unfortunately. It's just how long it takes to add housing. But if you were to put that into some various shelter strategies, round numbers, you could, get 1,000 people off the streets at $20,000 or $18,000 per bed. So that's kind of the lane that we try to operate in, is, again, quick, cost-effective strategies that can come online within months to help people at a minimum put a roof over their head, get connected to services, and then determine what their next step is.
I want to ask a question that sort of reflects on what Drew just said and also what Hanan said about people waiting 200 days in a shelter to get housing. A shelter is not successful unless it is a path to housing. And once people can move on to housing, then other people can come into that shelter and take advantage of it. So just building more shelters isn't necessarily going to solve the homelessness problem unless we also build ways for people to get through those shelters. But it doesn't necessarily have to be traditional solutions like we've thought of. So I would ask everybody, what do we need to do to try to increase the throughput? And do any of you have any ideas of things that San Diego hasn't really scaled? I know Levi has an answer. He's smiling over there.
Yeah. Anybody else want to go first?
No, you can go, Levi.
Okay. So in the panel before this one, it was also mentioned, you know, about how the private sector is the largest builder of our housing here in San Diego. When it comes to operating shelters, when it comes to outreach workers, when it comes to everybody in homeless services, everybody up to a director position is still low income in this city. So when we're talking about operating shelters, we're also talking about being able to staff 1,000-bed shelter with something like 300-person workforce. Now, if that workforce itself, they're making $40,000 a year, that is not sustainable to be able to live in this city. So I think one of my I've been talking about shared housing for years. I'm super thankful that this year.
Can you define what that is really quick for those who may not know?
So shared housing is really you're matching people up to live together in something like an independent living or roommate situations where people are really just co-living together. And so this year I was able to, with the help of Heather Newhart, we started PAVE San Diego, which is a shared housing program that now has 19 beds. It is one of the most underexplored and definitely underfunded and supported means of ending homelessness for people here in San Diego. Because typically when somebody does get a housing subsidy or a voucher, in my role as a housing navigator previously, we would be running around with, you know, the voucher is not physical, but we'd be running around saying, hey, I have this tenant for you. I have this tenant for you. And a landlord doesn't have to say I'm not renting to them because they used to be homeless. They don't have to say I'm not renting to them because, you know, they have a third party check. That demand is so high. And so we've got to be able to create more solutions that realistically are faster. But I think I understand, too, you know, if we start on a large scale talking about reintegrating people into the neighborhoods, obviously the NIMBYs are going to be very upset. So there are so many ILA operators existing in San Diego who are doing the hard work of housing people in this very creative way. And so I would like to see a lot more of that. And an ILA is an independent living association. So same kind of thing as shared housing. And it's essentially you're letting people versus having, a facility where you have a staff member who comes and says your socks are not allowed to be on the floor. You sort of get that peer support from your roommate who says, hey bro, could you not leave your socks, you know? And so I think that is one of the healthiest and most healing ways to reintegrate people into society, and I'd like to see that further supported. So
thanks for defining ILA. Hanan, your organization operates at some shelters, including one in San Diego. What do you think we need to do?
Just thinking about our shelter operations, we have to have staffing 24/7. And we have high turnover, as Levi mentioned, the income is not sustainable for our shelter workers. And then you're also always short-staffed and people are cycling in and out. When people come into our shelter, it takes us a couple of months at least to stabilize them, right? Like you gotta work on the healthcare aspect of it, food and basic needs. And then from there, we can begin working towards a housing plan. And oftentimes they're coming in with zero income or fixed income. So affordability is just not there. So I think one, like increasing the staffing in our shelter operations so that we can really have focused attention on folks and our caseload should be a lot less. And then having various housing options. We know we're short on permanent supportive housing, but exploring more rapid rehousing and having a consistent way of how that rental assistance is offered. Some organizations may offer 3 months, some offer 6 months. but if we were to follow HUD guidelines, that allows us to do for 24 months. So that gives us at least 2 years to work with folks to get them the income that they need to stabilize and get them towards cost sharing and taking over their rent. So I think we need to increase those types of housing interventions and always, of course, shared housing if that's available for people. It's, we all live with a roommate, right? Like, I have a husband, we kids, like, they're my roommates. So we need to consider that being an option in San Diego because of just affordability.
I think I really appreciate the explanations that were just given, that on a programmatic level, I completely agree with. I'm going to answer more from the policymaking side. I think that the perspective on policymaking around homelessness and shelter operations needs to shift away from a minimalist approach that begins from an assumption about what people deserve or what policymakers think people deserve, which is essentially that you're lucky to have any service that's provided, and so therefore we will offer the smallest service possible to the widest number of people. That is a failed model, and the best way that I can explain that is that the throughput that you're talking about, the exit of people to housing, occurs at the highest levels in shelter environments that include higher levels of resource and staffing. And the worst outcomes occur in the environments that have the lowest levels of resources and staffing. I've been a big supporter that safe camping and safe parking needs to be a part of the equation, particularly on an emergency basis. However, we also have to recognize the fact that those two interventions have poor outcomes. They have the lowest utilization. We are paying for vacant spots on a regular basis, ongoing. They have the largest number of people who drop out and we lose track of them. And they have the fewest people who exit those programs into housing. On the other hand, some of the more expensive shelter operations, the harm reduction shelter in Midway that is run by Alpha Project, which focuses on people with complex substance use issues, has some of the highest exits to successful exits to housing. So I think if we're going to make progress on the issue, we need to stop thinking about it from the standpoint of bringing the whole system down to the lowest common denominator, both because it fails to make progress, and when you factor in the long-term outcomes, it is not the cheapest approach. It is actually the most expensive approach, is to continue to invest in short-term solutions that yield poor long-term results.
So our view is, very broadly speaking, we have to operate along parallel paths. And I think we can all agree housing's an ideal outcome. But we're focused on, we see thousands of people suffering on the streets, and we see how long it takes to add housing and how costly it is, that we're very much focused on how can we help people at a minimum move indoors as quickly as possible. It's kind of like if I gave each of you $1 million and I said, okay, you can help two people 2 or 5 or 8 years down the road, or you can help 100 people within a few months. Pretty sure I know which answer you're going to go with. So that's the lane that we operate in. But we think that folks, there should absolutely be folks and organizations focused on how can more housing inventory be added. We're just coming at it from a standpoint of, you know, if housing's the only thing that's focused on, that's like telling passengers on a sinking ship, hang tight, we'll build you some lifeboats sometime in the next 2 to 5 to 20 years, because that's unfortunately just how long it can take to add or build housing. The other thing I think that's critical is there's only 78 detox beds in the entire county that accept Medi-Cal. Okay, so over 90% of people that are ready for that level of help, they can't access it because there's such a significant shortage. And the point in time count might say that whatever the number is, 20 or 25% of folks on the streets have some level of substance abuse or addiction. Well, that's generally what's the term,
self-reported
at 4 a.m. to a total stranger. I don't know about you, but I'm not going to self-report my own issues to a total stranger at 4 in the morning. The number, when we talk to a lot of different outreach workers, and a lot of them have been there, done that, the number we overwhelmingly hear is 80%, and some of them are convinced it's way more than that, that have some level of substance abuse or addiction. So adding detox beds and adding that level of service to help folks truly address what's going on in here, we think is critical for, again, adding short-term options, long-term housing options, but really helping folks get connected to the appropriate level of services to, again, help them address substance abuse, addiction, behavior, and mental health issues that might be plaguing them.
Would any of you like to respond to it?
I just want to say one thing that's not necessarily a disagreement with Drew, but I want to point out that the majority of people in this room, I'm going to assume, use alcohol, cannabis, or other drugs on a regular basis, and you do that well housed. And the detox bed issue is a very real issue, and all of the services that we're talking about are a very real issue. My concern in the policy discussion is that these become sideshows to the real issue, which is that we need shelter and we need housing, and that cannot be dependent upon whether somebody has a mental health condition or substance use, because the vast majority of people who have those issues are housed. And the reason so many of those people with those issues are unhoused in San Diego is because of our cost of housing.
So I'm going to come back to the homelessness plan, which showed that the city hired the Corporation for Supportive Housing to work on a plan about what it would take to significantly reduce homelessness in San Diego in the next 10 years. And this was the updated version. And it did call not just for spending on shelter, but for also spending on a variety of other interventions. Diversion, which is essentially, trying to divert somebody from the homeless service system. So that could be financial resources to help them do that, or maybe even sometimes it's as simple as helping them fix their car so they can keep going to their job. There's also rapid rehousing, which can give people some assistance for a short term. And then there's that longer term housing and also that prevention services. Wanted to go through that because I want to ask this group, how do we think that the city's doing on implementing these plans beyond shelter? We've definitely made some strides in terms of adding shelter beds. We are in a moment right now where we're on the precipice of losing beds. But how do you think we're doing in those other categories? Hanan's laughing, so I'm going to make her answer.
No. the reality is we're not building enough, right? We have such shortage for housing, and so we need to really address that. And I will say a few things that the city's doing really well. One of the programs that we just started this year is the Encampment Resolution Fund, funded through the state. What we're doing is going to encampments in specific areas and bringing outreach workers to work with individuals in that whole encampment, and then have permanent housing intervention completely assigned to them so that we can get them into housing right away. So if we're, the idea of moving people around based on our anti-camping ban doesn't really solve the homelessness, but by getting people into housing, addressing those encampments together, we've seen that to be really successful. So I think in terms of the housing aspect of it, we can build shelters all day, but if we don't have permanent housing to put people into, we'll just keep people in shelters long term, and that will become a permanent housing solution for folks.
And I'll add to the ERF. I was an outreach worker down around the post office last year. That type of innovation and looking at things differently is a huge part of what we need to continue. Working on the ERF, we were able to maintain the contact with our clients. So often when I worked on 16th Street, for example, I would have clients in dire need and then maybe not see them the next week, literally. Whereas ERF, not only were we working off a by name list, staying in contact with those people, but also to that funding for what their ultimate housing solution was, all in the same package. It wasn't, you know, being a case manager and having to seek over here for this service and then, you know, go to the Housing Commission for this piece. Obviously, that still has to happen. But the key part of it was that with ERF, the outreach workers were tasked with going out prior to the police. And so the outreach workers was who everybody was building their relationships with. And so that now we're seeing a lot of those people, the ERF by the post office, now a lot of those people have moved into housing and they're on their way to their next step. So a lot more thinking about things creatively in that way, in a block by block kind of basis, and solving this community by community, because there's a reason that they stay in the areas that they stay in. So
what they are.
Encampment resolution funds.
Sorry, I thought Hanan defined it.
I need a reminder on the acronyms too, so thank you. To answer your question, I don't think that we're doing particularly